The Merchant of Venice by William Shakespeare. Retold by Peter Costa. Chapter 1. The Merchant Decides to Help a Friend. There was once a very rich man who lived in Venice. His name was Antonio. He became rich by buying and selling things. Venice is a city near the sea in Italy, and a lot of ships arrive there. Antonio owned some ships. The ships went to other parts of the world, and the captains of these ships bought things in other countries. They did not pay much money for these things. When the ships were full, the captains went to Venice and sold the goods to the people who lived there. They sold them for a lot more money than they had paid. People who made money like this were called merchants. Antonio was one of the richest merchants in Venice. To become rich like this, the merchants had to take some big risks. It cost a lot of money to buy the ships and to pay the people who worked on them. The merchants also had to pay for the things they bought. Sometimes a ship sank in a storm and everything was lost. Sometimes the ships were attacked. Pirates stole the cargo or burned the ships. Sometimes the sailors stole the cargo or the ship. There were many dangers. Antonio was a good man who often helped his friends when they needed money. However, he was not always happy. When he was sad, he wondered why he was sad. It made him tired to think about it. He did not know why he was sad. His friends thought he was sad because he was worried about his ships and his cargoes. They tried to imagine what it would be like if they had that much money and took such big risks. They thought about storms and pirates. They thought about losing all that money. One of his friends, Salerio, said, "You are sad because you are rich. You have too much to worry about with all your ships on the oceans around the world." Another friend, Solanio, agreed. "If they were my ships and my money," he said, "I would always be thinking about what could go wrong. That would make me sad." "Yes," agreed Solanio. "If I blew on my tea to make it cool, I would think of the wind at sea and the storms that could sink my ships. If I looked at the sand in the hourglass, I would think of all the sand that my ships could run into. Even my house would make me worried because it is made of big stones. This would make me think about the rocks my ships could hit. Everything I saw would make me worry about my ships and my cargoes. I am certain that this is what makes you sad, Antonio." Antonio didn't agree. "I have a lot of ships and a lot of cargoes. If I lose one or two, it does not matter," he said. "I am not worried. I'm certain that you are wrong. That is not why I am sad." Solanio tried to think of another reason. "You must be in love, Antonio." Antonio disagreed again. "No, I'm not in love," he answered. "Well," said Solanio, "if you are not worried about your ships and cargoes and you are not in love, we don't know what is making you sad. All we can say is that you are sad because you are not happy. You might as well be happy because you are not sad. Then you could sing and laugh again." "I think," said Antonio, "that the world is a stage. Everybody has a part to play, and my part is a sad part." Another friend, Graziano, tried to make Antonio happier by telling him jokes and silly stories. He talked all the time, and people thought he was a fool. "If you say nothing and look sad," he advised, people will think you're wise. Antonio's best friend was Bassanio. Bassanio thought that Graziano talked a lot but said nothing. Trying to find a meaning in his words is like trying to find a needle in a haystack, he said. If you do find it, you soon discover that it is not sharp. Antonio's friends were very kind, and he liked them a lot, but they did not succeed in making him happier. Of course, the real problem was that Antonio was bored. However, all that would soon change. One day, Bassanio came to visit Antonio. This was not unusual, because they were good friends. But this visit was more important than usual for Bassanio. He already owed Antonio a lot of money, but now he wanted to borrow some more. Of course, Antonio wanted to know why Bassanio needed the money. "I have been spending more money than I earn," began Bassanio. "I already owe you a lot of money. I will tell you how I am going to get enough money to pay back all the money I owe."
"Yes, tell me," said Antonio. "If I can help you, I will."
"When I was a boy at school," began Bassanio, "I sometimes lost a ball when I was playing. When that happened, I would throw another ball in exactly the same way and watch it carefully. I would often find the two balls together. You might like to think of your money that way. The money you gave me is the first ball. It is lost, and I know it is my fault. But if you give me some more money, it could be like that second ball and help you get all your money back. I will give back the money you give me now as well as the money that I have already lost." Antonio invited him to continue. Bassanio told him about a rich young lady in Belmont. Her name was Portia. Her father died and left her a lot of money. She was beautiful as well as rich, and she was not married. Many men came from all over the world to court her, but nobody had succeeded. Bassanio had met Portia before, and he knew that she liked him. He told Antonio that if he had enough money, he would soon make her his wife.
"She is rich and young and beautiful. Her hair is like gold, and her face is always sunny and happy. She is always smiling. Antonio, she is beautiful. She likes me. I am certain she would marry me," he explained.
Antonio laughed. "You are my friend, Bassanio," he comforted, "and I will help you. You know that all my ships are at sea just now, so I do not have much money to give you. However, you can go into town and try to borrow the money. Tell the moneylenders that Antonio will guarantee the money is paid back to them. Don't worry. I will help you to go to Belmont and court Portia." Bassanio, of course, was very pleased. He immediately started to make his plans. Chapter 2. Portia has some visitors. Bassanio was right about Portia. She was young, beautiful, and rich, and she was not married. However, like Antonio, she was unhappy and tired. She had a maid called Nerissa, and Nerissa told her that people can get sick from having too much as easily as they get sick from not having enough.
"Those are wise words, Nerissa," Portia told her.
"Wise words are not much good if nobody takes any notice," replied Nerissa.
"That's true," agreed Portia. "But if it were as easy to do something as it is to say it, then poor people would live in palaces. I can easily teach 20 people what to do, but it is much more difficult to be one of the 20 people that follow my own teaching." Portia was unhappy because she wanted a husband, but her father's will stopped her from choosing one that she liked. At the same time, it stopped her from refusing one that she did not like. Her father had arranged a kind of guessing game for men who came to court his daughter. There were three boxes. Each one had something written on it. Every suitor had to choose a box. Portia's father thought the right man would understand the meaning of the three boxes and choose the right one. The man who chose the right box could marry Portia. But if a man chose the wrong box, he would never marry anyone at all. Her first suitor was a prince from Naples. Portia did not like him because he talked about cats all the time. He didn't seem to know about anything except cats, and nothing else interested him. Portia did not like cats. Her second suitor was a count. Portia did not like him because he always looked sad or angry or both. He never looked happy, and she was afraid that when he got old, he would be a very unhappy husband for her. Her third suitor was a French lord. Portia did not like him either because he did not have his own way of thinking. He tried to be just like every person he met. She thought it would be like having 20 husbands, and she couldn't love him at all. Her next suitor was a baron from England. She didn't like him because he had never studied anything. She could not speak with him because he did not understand Latin, French, or Italian. She wanted a husband who could talk to her. The Scottish lord was no better. He began to argue with the English baron, and Portia told them both to leave. The German duke was the worst of all because he was drunk all the time. Portia thought that at his best he was worse than a man, and at his worst he was little better than an animal. She hoped that he would not ask to choose one of the boxes, for if he chose the right one, she would have to marry him. However, none of these men were brave enough to choose one of the boxes. They thought the risk was too big. Portia remembered that while her father was still alive, a young man called Bassanio came to visit them from Venice. She liked him a lot. She thought he was brave and interesting and handsome. She hoped he would court her and be brave enough to choose a box. Perhaps he would choose the right box and make her his wife. Instead of this, however, she received news that the Prince of Morocco was on his way to court her. "Not another one," she exclaimed. She was tired of suitors. She thought her father had given her a very difficult problem. If one of the suitors was brave enough to choose a box and choose the right one, she would have to marry him whether she liked him or not. If he chose the wrong box, she couldn't marry him, even if she liked him. It was more than annoying. Chapter 3. Antonio Borrows Some Money. There was another rich man in Venice. His name was Shylock. He earned his money by lending money to other people and making them pay interest. A lot of people borrowed money from him. Of course, Shylock's business had risks too. Sometimes people were not able to pay back the money they had borrowed. Sometimes they would not pay it back, even if they could. When people borrowed money from Antonio, he did not make them pay interest. He thought it was wrong to make people pay interest. He said rich people should help poor people. Shylock was very angry about this because people went to borrow money from Antonio instead of borrowing from him. This meant that Shylock earned less money. Another reason that Antonio and Shylock didn't like each other was that Antonio was a Christian
and Shylock was a Jew. They disagreed about a lot of things and did not talk to each other. When Antonio told Bassanio to go to town and borrow money, Bassanio visited Shylock. He asked Shylock to lend him £30,000 and said he would pay it back in 3 months.
"How do I know you can pay it back?" asked Shylock.
Bassanio smiled. "My friend Antonio will help me. If I do not pay you in 3 months, he will do it for me." Now it was Shylock's turn to smile. Perhaps this would be a chance for him to hurt his enemy in some way.
"I understand that Antonio has some ships in different parts of the world," he said, "and that when they come back, he will have plenty of money. However, there are many risks in his business. There are pirates, and there are storms, and everything could be lost. But I am not worried about him, because I know that Antonio is a good man. £30,000 is a lot of money, but I believe he will help you."
Shylock went to visit Antonio. When he saw him, he remembered how much he hated him. However, he did not show his hatred. He tried to be friendly.
"It's £30,000 for 3 months, isn't it?" he asked.
Antonio and Bassanio agreed.
"What interest will you pay?" he asked.
Before long, Antonio and Shylock were arguing about interest. Antonio called Shylock some bad names.
"He looks like a good apple," he told Bassanio, "but inside he is rotten."
Bassanio was worried. Perhaps Shylock would not lend him the money, so he spoke to Antonio. Antonio was sorry.
"Will you still lend us the money?" Antonio asked Shylock.
"Why should I?" asked Shylock. "You often say bad things about me for the way I lend money. I never argue with you about it because I am a man who does not get angry quickly. You call me names. You call me a dog. You spit on my clothes. Now you need my help, and you come to me and ask for money. I should tell you that a dog has no money. How can a dog lend you £30,000? Or should I say thank you for spitting on my clothes? Should I say that because of these kind acts, I will be pleased to lend you £30,000?
"If you lend us this money," pleaded Antonio, "I will not call you names or spit on your clothes again."
"I am not asking you to lend us the money as if we were your friends. Lend it to us as if we were your enemies. Then, if we cannot pay it back in time, you will feel better about making us pay the penalty."
Shylock pretended to be surprised.
"Antonio, I want to be your friend. I want to forget all the bad things you said to me. I want to help you. I won't make you pay interest for the money I lend you."
Bassanio thought this was kind.
"Come with me to the judge," said Shylock, "so that he can write the contract. I will lend you £30,000 for 3 months. You will pay no interest. Just for fun, however, let's agree that if you do not pay me on time, you will give me 1 pound of your flesh from wherever I choose to take it."
Antonio agreed. He even told Bassanio that he thought Shylock was kind because he was not making them pay interest. But Bassanio did not agree.
"I won't let you do that for me," he insisted. "The risk is too big. I would rather stay poor and in debt."
Antonio was certain that he would be able to pay the money on time. "My ships come back a whole month before we have to pay the money," he replied. "I expect 30 times £30,000 when they arrive. Don't worry, my friend." Shylock agreed.
What used to be is a pound of a man's flesh. I cannot sell it. It would be better to have a pound of a cow's flesh or a sheep's flesh. Then you could eat it. It's just for fun. I want to be your friend. If you don't want to be friends, we will not make a contract.
Antonio agreed to the penalty, and they arranged to meet at the judge's house. Chapter 4. The Prince of Morocco visits Portia. The Prince of Morocco arrived in Belmont to court the Lady Portia. He was a very rich man and very strong. He was brave in war. He came to Belmont with some servants. People always knew when the Prince of Morocco was coming because his servants blew their trumpets. It was all very wonderful. The prince told Portia about his famous battles. He bragged about how many victories he had won and how he won them. He told her how brave and strong he was. He told her many good things about himself.
"All the women in my country love me," he boasted. "They always tell me I am strong and brave."
However, he knew he might not win Portia for his wife. Strength and bravery were not needed in a game of chance. If a strong man and a weak man play a game of chance, the weak man has as much chance of winning as the strong one.
"If I do not choose a box, the prize might go to someone who is not worthy of winning it," he said.
"That is true," agreed Portia, "and there is nothing I can do about it. It is a rule that my father made before he died." The prince was certain that he would die of sadness if someone else chose the right box and won Portia as his wife. He had to win her himself, so he really wanted to try. He asked Portia to take him to the boxes and allow him to choose.
"Remember," said Portia, "that if you choose the wrong box, you cannot marry anyone."
"I know," answered the prince, looking at the beautiful Portia, "and I will take my chance. Where are the boxes? I want to choose one."
Portia said that they would have dinner first. "After dinner, you may choose," she said.
"Then I will be either the happiest or the saddest man in the world," said the Prince of Morocco.
Chapter 5. A Servant Tricks His Father and Gets a New Job. Shylock had a servant whose name was Lancelot. Lancelot did not like working for Shylock and was always thinking about running away from him. He believed the devil was telling him to run away, but his conscience was telling him to stay. He couldn't decide what to do. He knew he should not obey the devil and that his conscience was telling him the right thing to do. First, he decided to obey his conscience and stay. Then, he thought if he stayed, he would be obeying the devil because Shylock was like a devil too. When he thought of that, he decided he should run away. As he was thinking about this, a very old man carrying a basket came to him. He asked Lancelot where the moneylender Shylock lived. Lancelot recognized this man. It was his own father, Gobbo, but the poor old man was quite blind and did not recognize his son. Lancelot was a strange man and decided to have some fun with his father. Instead of telling the old man he was his son, he told him how to get to Shylock's house. The old man asked him whether Lancelot lived with Shylock in that house. Lancelot tricked his father by telling him Lancelot was dead. His poor father was very sad.
"Are you certain?" he asked.
"Don't you know me?" asked Lancelot.
"No, I don't know you," answered Gobbo. "Is my son really dead?"
"Don't you know me, father?"
asked Lancelot again.
"No, I am blind," answered Gobbo. "If I could see you, I might know you."
"It is a wise father who knows his son," said Lancelot. "I am Lancelot, your own son. That is the truth. Give me your blessing."
He knelt in front of his father.
"No," said his father, "I am certain that you are not Lancelot, my son. I don't know you. Stand up, please."
"I am your son," exclaimed Lancelot. "I was tricking you, but now it is time to stop. I am your own son, Lancelot."
Gobbo still could not believe the young man he was talking to was really his son, Lancelot.
"I know you are my father, and Marjorie, your wife, is my mother," said Lancelot.
Gobbo agreed that his wife's name was Marjorie, and he began to feel Lancelot's head with his hands. At last he realized he was talking to his son, and he was very pleased.
"Tell me, how are you getting on with your master?" he said. "I have brought him a present."
"He gets on well with me," answered Lancelot, "but I do not get on well with him. I have just decided to run away from him and find another master. Don't give him a present. He doesn't need it. He is rich, and he does not give me enough food, and I am dying of hunger. You can count the bones in my body because I am so thin. Father, I am glad you are here. Give your present to Bassanio. I would like to serve him because he cares for his servants. They always have plenty to eat and wear beautiful clothes."
Gobbo agreed to help his son and went with him to see Bassanio. The old man asked Bassanio to take his son Lancelot as a servant. Bassanio agreed. He knew that Lancelot worked for Shylock and that Shylock spoke well of him. He ordered one of his other servants to prepare some clothes for Lancelot. Lancelot and his father went to Shylock's house to get Lancelot's belongings and move out. Shylock warned Lancelot that Bassanio would give him less food, but Lancelot took no notice. He told Shylock that he was happy to be leaving him and going to work for Bassanio. Shylock was equally pleased that Lancelot was leaving his house and going to Bassanio. He thought Lancelot was lazy and ate too much. Shylock had a daughter, whose name was Jessica. She was a beautiful young girl, and she was secretly in love with Lorenzo. Lorenzo was Bassanio's friend and was staying with him at that time. She had to keep her love a secret from her father because Lorenzo was not a Jew, and her father would never allow her to speak to him. Jessica did not like the way her father behaved and wanted to get away from him by marrying Lorenzo. They were making a secret plan to run away together. Jessica was sad to hear that Lancelot was leaving her father and going to work for Bassanio because she liked Lancelot. She thought he made her father's serious house more enjoyable. She gave him a letter to give to Lorenzo. Lancelot was also very sad to leave Jessica, and cried as he left.
Chapter 6. Shylock's Daughter Runs Away.
Bassanio was very happy to have the money Antonio borrowed from Shylock. He decided to have a big party that night. Antonio's friend, Graziano, wanted to go with Bassanio to Belmont.
"May I come?" he asked.
Bassanio liked Graziano and enjoyed being with him at parties. However, Graziano did say and do some strange things. His friends understood this, but there were other people who were less understanding. Bassanio told Graziano he would come with him to Belmont, but asked him to behave in a serious way. He did not want to spoil his chances of courting Portia by having a friend who acted like a fool. Graziano agreed to behave very well. He said he would be very serious. He said he would be quiet when other people spoke.
Bassanio didn't quite believe him, but allowed him to come anyway.
"Well, we shall see how you behave," he said. "But the party tonight does not count, does it?" asked Graziano.
"Of course not," exclaimed Bassanio.
"Tonight we want to have a very happy time, and it would be foolish to stop you from behaving as you usually do. No, come and enjoy yourself with our friends. We have reason to be happy."
Bassanio's friends, including Graziano and Lorenzo, were planning a parade for the party. They were worried that they had only 2 hours to prepare for it when Lancelot gave Lorenzo the letter from Jessica. As Lancelot was leaving, Lorenzo asked him where he was going.
"Bassanio has decided to invite Shylock to the party," he said, "so I'm going to my old master to invite him to have dinner with my new master."
"Good," said Lorenzo. "Tell Jessica that I will come to see her," he said, "but do not let her father hear it."
Solerio and Solanio hurried off to prepare for the party. They were going to make masks for the parade and arranged to meet at Graziano's house in about an hour. Lorenzo was very excited by Jessica's letter and told Graziano about their plans. He was going to Shylock's house that night, and Jessica would be ready to leave. She would be disguised as a boy and would go with him. She would take some money and jewels with her. She would even come to the party disguised as Lorenzo's torchbearer. Lorenzo was so happy that he allowed Graziano to read Jessica's letter. Lancelot went back to his old master, Shylock the moneylender, to give him the invitation to Bassanio's party. Shylock read the invitation and called Jessica, but she did not answer. He called her again.
"Jessica! Jessica!"
She still didn't come or answer. Then Lancelot called her. At that moment, Jessica came. Shylock told her that he had been invited to Bassanio's party and that he had decided to go.
"You are probably wondering why I agreed to go," said Shylock. "They did not invite me because they love me, and I am not going because I love them. I am going in hate to eat at their expense. Jessica, I want you to look after the house. I have a feeling that something will go wrong for me tonight."
He did not know about Jessica's plan to run away with Lorenzo that very night, but he had a bad dream, and this had made him worried. Lancelot told him that some of Bassanio's friends were planning to wear masks and have a parade with torchbearers, and this made Shylock more worried. He told Jessica to make certain the doors and windows were shut and locked. He told her she should not even look out of the windows to watch the parade. He was so worried that he almost decided to stay at home. But in the end, he decided he would go. Lancelot told Jessica that she should look out of the window.
"Then you will see a Christian man worth seeing," he said.
Jessica was very pleased to see her father go.
"If our plan succeeds, I will lose a father and you will lose a daughter," she thought.
It was dark, and the party at Bassanio's house had not begun yet. Graziano and Solerio waited for Lorenzo outside Shylock's house. Each of them had a mask, and each of them had a torchbearer to show them the way. At last, Lorenzo arrived. He said that if they ever wanted to steal a girl for a wife, he would wait as long for them as they had waited for him. He called out for Jessica, and she came to a window. She was dressed as a boy, but she didn't like it. She said she felt strange. However, she was happy to see Lorenzo, and she gave him a box of jewels and money. Lorenzo asked her to come outside and be his torchbearer. She wasn't very excited to be the torchbearer, because then everyone would be able to see her. Lorenzo told her she needn't worry, because her disguise was very good,
and nobody would recognize her. She went to lock the doors of the house and get some more money. Then she came outside to Lorenzo, and they all went to Bassanio's party. When they arrived at Bassanio's house, they discovered the party had ended. The wind had changed, and Bassanio's ship was ready to sail to Belmont. Bassanio and Graziano had to hurry to get on the ship because the captain wanted to begin his journey as soon as possible. Bassanio told Antonio that he would hurry back as soon as he was successful with the Lady Portia so that he could pay back the money. Antonio told him not to hurry.
"It's all right," he said. "If you hurry, you might spoil your chances. Take your time and court the lady, and don't worry about the debt."
The two friends shook hands, and Bassanio went onto the ship. Graziano was already on it, and it soon sailed away. Chapter 7. The Prince of Morocco Chooses a Box. In Belmont, Portia and the Prince of Morocco stood in front of the three boxes. Each box had some writing on it to help the suitors choose. The first box was made of gold. The writing on it said, "If you choose me, you will get what many men want." The second box was made of silver. The writing on it said, "If you choose me, you will get what you deserve." The third box was made of lead. The writing on it said, "If you choose me, you will risk everything you have."
"How will I know whether I have chosen the right box?" asked the Prince of Morocco.
"When you choose a box," answered Portia, "I will give you a key to open it. The right box has a picture of me inside it. If you choose that box, I will be yours, and I will always be your wife." The prince looked at the boxes. The gold box was very beautiful, and the silver box was beautiful too. But the lead box was not very beautiful at all. He read the writing on each of the boxes. He read the writing on the lead box and thought about what it might mean.
"If you choose me, you will risk everything you have," he said. "Risk everything, but for what? For lead? Sometimes you must take risks, but then you want to get something for it. A man who thinks like gold will not stoop to lead, so I will not choose that box."
Then he read the writing on the silver box and thought about what that might mean.
"If you choose me, you will get what you deserve," he said. "Let me think carefully about this. What do I deserve? I know I deserve what I have and more, but does that include the Lady Portia? To think that I do not deserve her would be weakness. I know I do deserve her. I am a prince. I am rich. I love her. Perhaps I should look no further, but choose this box."
Then he thought he should look at the gold box again before he decided. It was very beautiful. He thought it was wonderful. He read the writing on it again.
"If you choose me, you will get what many men want," he said. "What do many men want?" "That has to be the Lady Portia. Everyone in the world wants her to be his wife. They come from everywhere, near and far, from the four corners of the world, to see her and court her."
He was quiet for a few minutes while he thought.
"One of these boxes has a picture of Portia in it," he said. "Nobody would put her picture in a lead box. And who would put her picture in a silver box when there is a gold box 10 times as beautiful? Now, I am certain that the gold box is the one that contains her picture. Give me the key. I will open it and get what many men want."
One of Portia's servants gave him the key. He went to the gold box and opened it. He hoped that he would see a picture of Portia inside it, and that she would become his wife. However, there was a dead animal inside it. On the dead animal was a note. The prince read it.
The way that something looks is not always what it is worth. Lots of men give their lives to get things that look good, and when they die, they build beautiful tombs. Inside the tombs, however, lie their dead bodies. If you were as wise as you were bold, you would have made a better choice.
The prince was very sad. Portia would not be his wife, and he would never be able to marry anybody. He said goodbye to Portia and went back to Morocco. Chapter 8. The Moneylender is Angry. Back in Venice, there was one very angry moneylender. When he discovered his daughter Jessica had run away and taken money and jewels with her, he was furious. He tried to find her. Bassanio and Graziano were on the ship, and it had started to sail. Shylock wanted to stop the ship. He thought Jessica and Lorenzo might be on it, but it was too late. The ship had already gone. Antonio told Shylock that his daughter and her lover were not on it. Someone said they had gone away on a smaller boat, but nobody really knew where they were. Shylock ran through the streets of Venice looking for them.
My daughter, my money, my jewels, my money, my daughter, my jewels, he shouted. My jewels, my daughter, my money, my daughter stole my money. She stole my jewels. She ran away with a Christian. My money, my jewels, my daughter, we must find them.
All the little boys in Venice followed him and shouted,
My jewels, my daughter, my money.
Solanio heard them. He thought,
Antonio better pay his debt on time, or he will pay for this. Shylock is very angry. He will take revenge if he can.
Far, far away from Venice, in the sea between England and France, there was a big storm. A strong wind blew a heavy ship against the rocks. The ship and its cargo sank. Solerio was the first person in Venice to hear the news. When he met a Frenchman in a hotel, he hoped that it was not one of Antonio's ships. Chapter 9. The Prince of Aragon visits Portia. Portia waited for her husband in Belmont. Would any of her suitors be brave enough to guess which box had her picture inside it? Would she ever marry? If someone did choose the right box, would she like him? Every time another suitor arrived in Belmont, she asked herself these questions. Most suitors were not brave enough to guess. They knew that if they chose the wrong box, they could never marry. It was a big risk. Only the Prince of Morocco had chosen a box, and he had chosen the wrong one. The gold box did not have a picture of Portia in it. Bassanio was on his way to Belmont to court Portia, and perhaps he would choose a box. Before he arrived, however, the Prince of Aragon reached Belmont. He asked to choose one of the boxes. He knew that he must never tell anyone which box he chose. Just like the Prince of Morocco, he stood in front of the boxes with Portia and read the writing on each one of them. First, he read the writing on the lead box.
If you choose me, you will risk everything you have, he said. I will not risk everything for ordinary lead. It has to be something that is worth more than lead. What does the gold box say?
He read the writing on the gold box.
If you choose me, you will get what many men want, he said.
He thought about this and decided not to choose the gold box.
I am not like ordinary men. Most men want things that look good on the outside, but do not take enough notice of the inside. I will not be fooled like that.
He read the writing on the silver box.
If you choose me, you will get what you deserve, he said. This is better. People should not be rich if they have not earned it. They should not pretend to be something they are not. They are too many people who live in palaces, but they are not worthy of them. Yes, I agree with this writing. I will choose the silver box and get what I deserve. Give me the key.
Portia's servant gave him the key. He went to the box to open it. He was certain that the silver box would have a picture of Portia in it. He opened the box. He was very quiet.
You are too quiet, said Portia. Have you not found my picture?
No, answered the Prince of Aragon. I have not found your picture in this box. I have found the picture of a fool who does not look like you at all. This is not what I wanted. Is this what I deserve?
There was some writing inside the box. It told him that he was too proud, and that proud men deserved foolish wives. The Prince of Aragon was very sad, just like the Prince of Morocco before him. He said a sad goodbye to Portia and left. Portia would have to wait for another suitor to choose the right box. Bassanio was on his way. Would he be brave enough to choose a box? Would he choose the right one? Chapter 10 Bad News for Antonio. The news for Antonio was not good. The ship that sank in the sea between England and France was his. Its valuable cargo lay at the bottom of the sea, and Antonio had lost his money. His friends hoped that there would be no more bad news for him. Shylock was still angry about his daughter Jessica, and the news for him was not good either. He paid people to look for her, but they could not find her. They came back with news about money she had spent and the jewels she had sold. All this made Shylock angrier and angrier.
My daughter, my own flesh and blood has gone, he said. My money is gone and my jewels are gone. Now I am losing more money looking for her, and all I hear is how she spends my money. How can she do this to me?
However, when he heard that Antonio had lost a ship and all its valuable cargo, he was pleased. He decided that if Antonio could not pay back his debt when it was due, he would make him pay the penalty. He would take 1 pound of his flesh. He would choose the heart. Then Antonio would not be able to take business away from him any longer, because he would be dead. The news got worse for Antonio. He lost another ship in a storm near Tripoli. It was a very large ship, and its cargo was very valuable. The ship and its cargo sat at the bottom of the sea. The news soon came to Venice, and Shylock was happier than ever. Now he would have revenge on his old enemy. He looked forward to taking 1 pound of Antonio's flesh.
You will not take 1 pound of his flesh, will you? Antonio's friends asked Shylock. What use is that? What can you do with it?
I can use it to go fishing, he replied. I can't eat it, but it will make me feel good. He has often laughed at me when I lose money. He even laughs at me when I don't lose money. He lends money to people for no interest, and so he takes away my friends and my business. Why does he do this? It is only because I am a Jew. But a Jew is just another person. Don't I have eyes and hands like he does? Don't I have feelings and passions like he does? Don't I eat the same food? Don't the same weapons hurt me as hurt him? Don't I get sick with the same illnesses as he does? Am I not cured in the same way? Don't I get hot in the summer and cold in the winter as he does? If you cut me, won't I bleed? If you tickle me, won't I laugh? If you poison me, won't I die? If you do me wrong, won't I take revenge?
Chapter 11. Bassanio visits Portia. Bassanio arrived in Belmont and went to visit Portia. Portia was very pleased to see him because she remembered him from his earlier visit. She was certain he would be brave enough to choose a box. She hoped he would be wise enough to choose the one with her picture in it. Bassanio loved Portia more than ever. He wanted to choose a box and marry her. However, Portia was now afraid that he would choose the wrong box. Then he would never be able to marry her. She tried to delay him from making his choice.
"Stay with me a little longer before you choose," she said. "Why not stay for 2 months? I wish I could tell you which box to choose, but I cannot. If you choose the wrong box, you will have to leave immediately, and I will never see you again. I would be very sad if that happened. I don't want you to go. Please don't choose a box yet."
Bassanio, however, said he could not wait. "I love you, Portia," he said, "but I am afraid to love you. I must know if I can marry you. I want you to be my wife, but I am afraid to hope for it." Portia tried again to delay him, but he would not listen. "Please, let me choose," he said. At last, Portia agreed. She took Bassanio to the 3 boxes and told him the rules.
"I am locked away in one of the boxes," she said. "If you truly love me, you will find me. If you live, I will live. Choose a box."
Bassanio looked at the 3 boxes, but he did not read the writing on them. He looked at the gold and silver. "The world is tricked by appearances," he said. "People often hide ordinary things with beautiful gold, silver, and jewels. People always agree with those who speak well, even if they say foolish things. Many people who seem brave are really cowards. How often do we believe in leaders who turn out to be bad? I remember the story of Midas, the man who loved gold too much. He wanted everything to be gold. He wished that he could make everything gold just by touching it. When he could, it was a disaster. He could not eat his golden food, and he was afraid to touch his daughter. No, I do not want these beautiful boxes of gold and silver. I will choose the lead box with its ordinary color. It speaks more to me than all the gold and silver in the world. Please give me the key to the lead box. Let happiness be mine." One of the servants gave him the key, and he went to the box and opened it. Portia was very pleased. She could not believe it until Bassanio opened the box and saw the picture of Portia inside it. When he saw the picture, he loved her even more because the picture was very beautiful. He wondered how anyone could paint such a good picture of her. It was almost as beautiful as Portia herself. He looked at all the parts of the picture. He looked at the eyes and the hair and the mouth. All of them were perfect, but Portia herself was even more beautiful than her picture. The writing inside the box told him that he had chosen the right box. It said that he should go to Portia and look into her eyes. She would be his wife. Bassanio could not believe it.
"Is it really true?" he asked. "Will you really be my wife? I am afraid to believe it until you say so."
Look at me standing here, said Portia. I am yours, such as I am. I wish that I were 1,000 times more beautiful and 10,000 times richer for you. Everything I am and everything I have is yours. Until now, I was the ruler of this palace, master of my servants and queen of myself. Now the palace, the servants, and I are all yours. I give them to you with this ring. Let it always be the symbol of our love. If you lose this ring, or sell it, or give it away, it will mean that you no longer love me.
I don't know what to say, said Bassanio. I have no words to describe my love. I am too full of happiness. This ring will not leave my finger until I die.
Nerissa and Graziano wished them happiness. Then Graziano surprised Bassanio and Portia. He told them he was in love with Nerissa. Nerissa had agreed to marry him, but only if Bassanio chose the right box and married Portia. He was just as pleased as Bassanio that the lead box had a picture of Portia in it. Graziano asked them to allow him to marry Nerissa at the same time Bassanio and Portia are married. Bassanio and Portia agreed. Before the wedding could happen, however, Salerio arrived from Venice. On his way to Belmont, he had met Lorenzo and Jessica. They came with him. Of course, Bassanio was very happy to see them and soon told them his good news. They met Portia. Bassanio made his visitors happy in his new palace. He asked how Antonio was, but Salerio would not answer. He gave him a letter that Antonio had written. As Bassanio read the letter, the colour left his face. Portia was worried.
"What bad news have you received from your friend?" she asked.
Bassanio had to explain everything to her. He told her about Antonio. He said he was a kind and good friend. He told her that he owed Antonio money. Then he told her that all of Antonio's ships had been lost at sea. There were ships in England, Spain, Tripoli, Mexico, and India. They had all sunk. Every one of them had valuable cargoes, and all the cargoes were lost. Now he did not even have one ship. Then he told her that Antonio had borrowed money from Shylock and had to pay it back. "He borrowed this money for me so that I could come here to court you," he said.
"How much is it?" asked Portia.
£30,000, replied Bassanio.
"Then give him 60,000 or even 100,000, said Portia. "I don't want you to be unhappy because your good friend is in trouble. Marry me first. Then let's go to Venice with our money as husband and wife to save your friend." Bassanio agreed, and they were married that night. Graziano married Nerissa as well. Salerio told Bassanio that Shylock would refuse to take any money from Antonio or from any of his friends. The date was due, and he wanted the pound of flesh that Antonio had agreed to give as a penalty. Jessica said that she heard Shylock say the same thing before she left Venice with Lorenzo. Portia asked if she could read the letter from Antonio. Bassanio gave it to her. This is what it said. "Dear Bassanio, all my ships have sunk, and everybody wants their money. I don't have enough to pay them. Shylock is demanding his penalty, and he will take my heart. I am going to die, so I give you the money you borrowed. You do not need to pay me back. I would like to see you before I die, but I do not want to spoil your pleasure. Come if you can." When Portia read this letter, she realized Antonio was a very good friend and told Bassanio to go to Venice immediately to see him. Bassanio left for Venice as soon as he could. Graziano went with him, but Nerissa stayed with Portia. Lorenzo and Jessica also stayed. They could not go back to Venice because Jessica's father Shylock was still very angry with them. What Antonio wrote in his letter was true. He had lost all his ships and all their valuable cargoes, and he did not have enough money to pay his debt to Shylock. Shylock demanded that Antonio pay the penalty he had promised. He wanted his pound of flesh. Antonio tried to argue with him, but Shylock would not listen. He was certain that the Duke would agree with him, and that Antonio would have to give him a pound of flesh. He was planning to ask for Antonio's heart so that Antonio would die. Solanio, Antonio's friend, thought that the Duke would never agree to make Antonio give a pound of flesh. Antonio, however, thought that the Duke would have to agree. He had written it down and signed it. It was a contract. "It is the law," he told Solanio. "If the Duke does not agree with the law, people will no longer do business with people from Venice. No, he must agree with Shylock. Our only chance was to ask Shylock to show mercy, but he will not listen, and he will demand the penalty. I only hope that Bassanio will come and see me before I die." Chapter 12. Portia has a plan. As soon as Bassanio and Graziano left for Venice, Portia told Lorenzo that she and Nerissa were going to stay in a convent until their husbands came back. She told him she wanted to prepare herself for marriage. She asked Lorenzo and Jessica to look after the palace and the servants until she came back. Lorenzo was very happy to do this for her. He thought she was a very wise and kind woman. "Bassanio is lucky to have her for his wife," he said. Portia said she agreed to let Bassanio go to Venice because Antonio's letter showed her that he must be a very good man. Portia and Nerissa, however, were not going to a convent. Portia had a different plan, but she did not want to tell Lorenzo and Jessica what it was. It was a secret. She called one of her servants. She told him to go to Padua and find her friend Bellario. She gave him a letter to give to Bellario. "He will give you some clothes and other things to bring back to me," she said. "Bring them to the ship that goes to Venice. Hurry, I will be at the ship before you get there." The servant hurried away with the letter, and Portia called Nerissa. "Come on, Nerissa," she said. "We are going to see our husbands sooner than they think." She told Nerissa that their husbands would not recognize them because they were going to disguise themselves as men. "I know how to behave like a man," she said. "I will wear a dagger and walk like a man. I will talk about the battles I have won. I will tell lies about the women who fell in love with me. I will tell people that I refused their love, and that they cried, and that some of them even died of sadness. I'll say that I'm sad about causing them to die, and everyone will believe that I am a man." Chapter 13. The Duke Listens to Shylock. Bassanio and Graziano got to Venice as quickly as they could. They were in time to see Antonio and went with him to see the Duke. The Duke had to decide whether Antonio should obey the contract and pay the penalty. If the Duke said Antonio had to pay the penalty, Shylock could take 1 pound of his flesh. The Duke told Antonio that he wished Shylock had some mercy. Antonio knew that the Duke had already spoken to Shylock and asked him to show mercy, but that Shylock had refused. He said that he would not fight with Shylock any longer, but meet his anger quietly. "I am ready to die," he said. The Duke called Shylock to come in. Shylock was waiting outside and came in immediately.
"Shylock," said the Duke, "everyone thinks that you are only demanding the penalty because you are angry. They think that you will change your decision at the last minute and show that you have mercy after all. I agree with them. It would be better if you had mercy now, and did not take a pound of this poor merchant's flesh. Perhaps you will have mercy on this merchant for all the troubles he is having with the loss of his ships and cargoes. This is what we expect you to do."
Shylock, however, was not going to do that.
"I have told you," he explained, "what I want to do. If you do not allow it, no man will do business with Venice again because they cannot trust his laws. Would you like to know why I want a pound of this man's flesh rather than 30,000 pounds? I will not tell you. What if I had a rat in my house and paid someone 10,000 pounds to kill it? Antonio is as bad as any rat. There are people who hate cats or some kinds of food. They cannot say why they hate them, but they do. In the same way, I hate Antonio. I cannot and will not give a reason. Is that an answer?"
"That's not an answer," shouted Bassanio. "Don't you have any feelings?"
"I don't have to please you with my answers," shouted Shylock.
"Does everyone kill everything they do not love?" asked Bassanio.
"Does anyone hate something he would not kill? Do you want a snake to bite you twice?"
asked Shylock. It was Antonio's turn to speak. "It is no use," he said. "Do not try to argue with the moneylender. You may as well go to the beach and try to stop the tide. You may as well ask a wolf why he killed the lamb and made its mother cry. You might as well try to stop the tops of the trees from blowing in the wind. All of these things are hard, but Shylock's heart is harder. Please don't argue with him any longer. Give the decision and allow the moneylender to have his pound of flesh."
Bassanio offered Shylock more money. "I will give you 2 pounds for every one that he owes you," he said.
"If you offered me 60 pounds for every pound that he owes me, and then 6 times that, I would not take it," replied Shylock. "I will have the penalty."
The Duke told Shylock, "If you show no mercy, you will receive no mercy."
"I do not need mercy," replied Shylock, "for I have done nothing wrong. You all have slaves to serve you. You call them your own, just like your dogs and cows, and use them however you want because you bought them. If I told you to make their beds as soft as yours and let them marry your sons and daughters and feed them with the same food that you eat, you would say, 'The slaves are ours.' This is what I say to you. It is my pound of flesh, and I will have it. If you refuse, the laws of Venice will become a joke. Tell me, will I have it?"
The Duke would not make a decision. He said he had sent a letter to Padua. He had asked a very famous wise man to come and hear the arguments and help him make a decision. This famous man's name was Bellario, and they would wait until he arrived. Chapter 14. The Young Judge Saves Antonio. Shylock was sharpening his knife, preparing to take his pound of flesh. Graziano was angry with him and called him a lot of bad names.
"I don't think you're a man," he shouted. "You are an animal."
"I don't care if you shout," replied Shylock. "You cannot shout away the penalty. I stand for the law, but you want to break it."
There was nothing that Bassanio or Graziano could say or do. Shylock would still not change his decision. A messenger arrived at the Duke's palace. He said he came from Padua and served Bellario. It was Nerissa disguised in a man's clothes. Nobody recognized her. She gave the Duke a letter. The letter said Bellario was too sick to come to Venice. He thanked the Duke for writing to him about Shylock and Antonio. He thought it was very interesting.
a very wise young judge from Rome, was visiting him at the time, and they talked about it together. They read many books about it. In the end, he asked the young judge to go to Venice in his place. He asked the Duke to listen to him. "Although he is very young, he is very wise," said Bellario's letter. "He knows what I think about it. Please take notice of what he says. His name is Balthazar." The young judge Balthazar was Portia, disguised in a man's clothes. Nobody recognized her. The Duke asked Antonio and Shylock to step forward. Portia told Shylock he was doing something very strange, but that Venetian law could not stop him. She told him that he should have mercy on the merchant Antonio.
"Why must I have mercy?" he asked. "Who can make me be merciful?"
"Nobody can make you have mercy," answered Portia. "It comes like rain from the sky. Nobody can make the rain come, and nobody can make you have mercy. It blesses the person who gives it, and also blesses the person who receives it. It is the strongest part of strong people. It is better than a king's crown. When we have mercy, we are most like God. Justice is useless without mercy. If we had only justice, it would be a very sad world. We ask for mercy, and we should try to show mercy to others."
"I will show no mercy," answered Shylock. "I do not want it, and I will not give it. I want justice. I want the penalty that is written in the contract."
"Can't he pay the money?" asked Portia.
"Yes," said Bassanio. "Here is the money, twice as much as Antonio borrowed. If that is not enough, I will give 10 times as much. If that is not enough, I will give my hands, or my head, or my heart. You must stop this merciless moneylender. To do a great right, you can do a little wrong."
"I cannot," said Portia. "We cannot change the law of Venice, or set a bad example. Other people will use our story to do greater wrongs for smaller rights. It cannot be done. We must obey the law." Shylock was very happy with the young judge. Portia asked him to show her the contract. She read it. "Shylock," she said, "they are offering you 3 times the money."
"I do not want the money," he said. "I want the penalty. It is my right."
"It is your right, and it is the law," agreed Portia. "You may take 1 pound of flesh from the merchant. It is written in the contract. Have mercy on the merchant, Shylock. Take 3 times the money, and tell me to burn the contract."
"I will burn the contract when he pays the penalty," cried Shylock, pointing at Antonio. "You are a good judge. You know the law. Nothing and nobody can make me change what I want. The contract stands."
Antonio had given up the fight against Shylock long ago. He wanted the judge to give his decision. So Portia told him he should prepare his body for Shylock's knife. Shylock was very happy. He blessed the young judge. He said the judge was much older in wisdom than in years. Portia told Antonio to take off his shirt. She asked Shylock if he had scales ready to weigh the flesh. Shylock showed her the scales he had brought with him. Then she asked him if he had brought a doctor with him. A doctor would be able to help Antonio after Shylock had taken the pound of flesh and perhaps stop him from dying. Shylock told her that it was not in the contract, so he had not brought a doctor to help Antonio. He said that if it wasn't in the contract, he could see no reason to do it.
"You can't make me do it unless it is in the contract," he reasoned.
Portia asked Antonio if he wanted to say anything before Shylock took his penalty. He just wanted to say goodbye to Bassanio and ask him to tell Portia that Antonio was a good friend. Bassanio felt bad because his friend was going to die. he remembered that Antonio borrowed the money from Shylock to help him. Antonio said he felt happy. He said he was lucky because he would never grow old and sick. He told Bassanio not to feel bad. Bassanio said he would do anything he could to save Antonio. He would die in his place or give up his wife if it could help Antonio. His wife, Portia, disguised as a judge, was not very happy to hear this. Graziano said the same about his wife, Nerissa. She was disguised as a messenger and was not very happy to hear what he said. Shylock thought that they were not very good husbands.
"That's what the Christian Lorenzo is like," he thought.
He got angry again when he remembered that his daughter Jessica was married to the Christian Lorenzo.
"Let me hear the decision," he shouted.
Portia gave the decision. 1 pound of the merchant's flesh is yours. It is what the contract says. You may take his flesh. Shylock held his knife and told Antonio to get ready.
"Wait!" exclaimed Portia. "You will not do anything that is not written in the contract. Is that right, Shylock?"
"Yes, that's right," said Shylock.
He wondered what the wise young judge was going to say.
"Well," said the young judge, "I have read the contract carefully, and it does not say anything about taking his blood. It says 1 pound of flesh. You can take your pound of flesh, but you may not take 1 drop of his blood. If you take any of his blood, the Duke will take everything you own."
Now it was Graziano's turn to bless the judge and call him wise.
"Did you hear that, Shylock?" he asked. "What a wise judge!"
"You wanted justice," Portia told Shylock, "and you will have it. You will have more justice than you wanted."
Shylock didn't want to give everything he owned to the Duke. He decided not to take his pound of flesh. He said he would take the money.
"Give me 90,000 pounds, he said, "and I will have mercy on the merchant and let him go."
Bassanio was happy to give him the money.
"Here it is," he said. "I have it ready for you."
He was very pleased that his friend Antonio would not die. Portia, however, had more to say.
"Wait," she said again. "He does not want the money. It is not written in the contract, and he said that he would not do anything that was not written in the contract. Shylock, you can take your pound of flesh just as the contract says. Why are you waiting?" she asked.
Shylock said he just wanted to have his money back.
"Just give me the money I lent you. I won't even demand interest," he said.
He was beginning to feel sick. Bassanio was ready to give it to him, but again Portia stopped him.
"He said in front of us all that he did not want the money. He wanted only the penalty that is in the contract."
Shylock understood that he would not get his pound of flesh. He understood that he would not get his money. He decided to go home.
"Wait," said Portia for the third time. "The law of Venice says that if you plan to kill a citizen of Venice, you will lose everything that you own. Half of what you have will belong to the person you try to kill, and the other half will belong to the Duke. Not only that, but the Duke is the only person who can save you from death if he decides to have mercy on you. You should ask the Duke for mercy."
Graziano thought Shylock should kill himself, but the Duke did not agree.
"I will show you what it means to be a Christian," he said. "I will give you mercy before you ask for it. You will live,
but half of everything you own is now Antonio's, and the other half belongs to me.
No! Shouted the moneylender. Please kill me! If you take my house and everything I own, you are taking my life anyway! You may as well kill me!
Portia asked Antonio if he could have mercy on Shylock. Antonio answered that he did not want half of everything that Shylock owned. He just wanted to borrow some money and use it to do business. Then he would give it to Lorenzo and Jessica when Shylock died. But Shylock must first become a Christian, he added. The Duke said that if Shylock did not agree to do what Antonio said, he would take back his mercy and Shylock would die. Shylock realized that he had no choice. He agreed. Portia told Nerissa to write a contract for this. Shylock said he didn't feel well. He went home. He was really feeling sick. Chapter 15. The Ring and the Young Judge. The Duke invited Portia and Nerissa to have dinner with him, but Portia said she had to hurry back to Padua. Bassanio still didn't realize that Portia was his wife. He thought she was a young judge. He offered her the £30,000 that he was going to give Shylock. Portia refused to take any money from him or from Antonio. She said she had to leave, but Bassanio begged her to let him give her something for helping them save Antonio. Portia agreed. She asked Bassanio for his ring. Bassanio was dismayed. It was the ring that Portia gave him. He remembered what she said when she gave it to him. If you lose this ring or sell it or give it away, it will mean that you no longer love me. Then he remembered what he said when she gave it to him. This ring will not leave my finger until I die. This ring is not very good, he told Portia. Allow me to buy you a better one.
No, said Portia. I like this ring. I don't want anything else. Just give me your ring.
I can't, said Bassanio. I will buy the best ring in Venice for you, but this ring must stay on my finger.
I see, said Portia. First, you teach me to beg. Then, you teach me how to answer a beggar.
My wife gave me this ring, said Bassanio, and I said I would never lose it, sell it, or give it away.
Even if that is true, said Portia, I have earned it by saving your friend. I am sure that your wife would agree.
She said goodbye to Antonio and Bassanio and left. Antonio thought Bassanio should give the young judge the ring, and at last Bassanio agreed. He gave the ring to Graziano. He told him to hurry after the young judge and give him the ring. He also wanted Graziano to try and bring the young judge to Antonio's house. Graziano ran after Portia and Nerissa and gave Portia the ring. She said she could not stay for dinner at Antonio's house, but she agreed to take the ring. She asked Graziano to show Nerissa where Shylock lived so that she could get him to look at the contract. Graziano did not realize that Nerissa was his wife because she was still disguised as a messenger. Nerissa had also given Graziano a ring before he left Belmont and said he should never lose it, sell it, or give it away. She decided to try and get her ring back from him too. When Graziano took her to Shylock's house, she asked him for it. He remembered that Bassanio gave the young judge his ring. He decided to do the same. He took it off his finger and gave it to her. Chapter 16. Bassanio and Graziano get their wives back. Portia and Nerissa arrived home. Lorenzo and Jessica were very pleased to see them. When Bassanio and Graziano arrived, Antonio was with them. They still didn't know that Portia and Nerissa were the young judge and his messenger. Nerissa noticed that the ring she had given Graziano was not on his finger and asked him about it. She pretended to be very angry because he had given it away. Graziano said he gave it to the judge's messenger when he asked for it because the judge and his messenger had saved their best friend, Antonio. He said it was only a ring, and it wasn't very valuable. However, Nerissa said that the value of the ring was in his promise to wear it until he died. Portia heard them arguing about it. "Bassanio would not give his ring away," she said. Then Bassanio had to tell Portia that he gave his ring to the young judge. He tried to explain. He told her about the young judge. "You would not be angry if you knew the young judge and what he did," he said. Portia said she did not believe him. "You gave it to a woman," she said. Bassanio was dismayed. "If you were there," he said, "you would have begged me for the ring and given it to the judge yourself." "That ring was a symbol of my love," said Portia. "If the judge has the ring, he will also have my love. If I ever meet him, I will love him."
"And I will love his messenger," said Nerissa.
"Dear Portia, please have mercy on me," pleaded Bassanio, "and I will never again break any promise I make to you." Antonio felt bad because he had told Bassanio to give the ring to the judge. "It is my fault," he said. "I am sure that Bassanio will never break a promise again. If he does, you may have my life to do with as you please."
"Good," said Portia. "Give him this, and tell him to look after it better than the other one."
She gave Antonio the ring. Antonio gave it to Bassanio. He told him to make sure that he did not lose it. Bassanio saw the ring and recognized it. "This is the ring I gave the judge," he said. "How did you get it?" He was very surprised.
"The judge slept in my bed last night," said Portia. "And his messenger slept in mine," said Nerissa.
The two women were smiling. Bassanio and Graziano did not understand until Portia and Nerissa explained that they were the judge and the messenger themselves. The two men were amazed and very happy. Then Portia gave Antonio a letter. It said that the news about some of his ships was wrong. Not all of them were at the bottom of the sea. Some of them were on the way to Venice now. Antonio was very happy. Portia also had the contract that Shylock had signed. In it, he said that when he died, Lorenzo and Jessica would have everything he owned. Lorenzo and Jessica were surprised and happy. Everybody was very happy, except perhaps Shylock.